A sense of place. Today on The Stack, we explore the titles that delve into the culture of a country, the cuisine of a particular city, even the character of a specific street. From a road trip through the south of France to the delights of Helsinki's restaurant scene, and strikingly stark but beautiful insights from a bustling street in São Paulo. Three titles that really take you there. Today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. So, today we're talking three different titles connected by their interest in place. Alongside me in Studio One today is Stack producer Fernando Augusto Pacheco to tell us briefly about the first title we're covering. Fernando, welcome.
Hello, Tom.
Good to have you with us. And one of the reasons, I guess, that you're here is because we're going to be in São Paulo, and we'll come to that later. But let's start with our first course, if you will. Fare magazine, F-A-R-E. Well, it's an exploration of the food scene, a different city every issue. Where are they headed, and what do you make of this?
Well, issue two is all about Helsinki. And I have to be honest, Tom, I was very curious because even though our colleague Marcos, you know, he loves Finland, he talks about Finnish food all the time, I never thought of the Helsinki food scene, to be honest. So I was very curious to read it. And I have to say, such a beautiful title. Their first issue was all about Istanbul, you know, which was, I think, you know, I was expecting, everyone knows the Turkish food is quite good, but I was wondering about Finnish food. But reading the magazine, I was like, wow, I need to go to Finland. You know, there's some trashy, may I say. There's a story here about cannibal, which is three patties, slices of ham, beef mince, sausage, and a fried egg. Sounds quite interesting. And Marcos used to go to that place where it's being featured.
It's a sort of massive protein medley, which is the kind of food that I can get on board with.
Exactly.
And it's interesting, as you say, because the first issue was about Istanbul, and there's all the cliches about Istanbul, crossroads, the meeting of two continents, and all the rest. As you point out, Helsinki may be slightly different, and yet there's these same collisions of culture, the same collisions of foodie influences, which are really interesting. And obviously Marcus talks about those as the host of the menu and all the rest. A quick note on Fare itself, the title, it's small format, very portable. It's looks like the kind of perfect magazine to take if you're going on a foodie tour, whether it's to Helsinki or Istanbul.
It's excellent design.
Well, let's hear from him now. As you say, Faye, this was your conversation with the editor-in-chief of Fare, Ben Mervis. Let's hear what he had to say.
Fare really reflects my personal, professional, academic interests. So I have a master's degree in medieval history from around the corner, King's College. After that, randomly fell into a world of fine dining and ended up traveling the world with my boss at the time, René Redzepi, at NOMA. And I sort of started to see things through his eyes. And traveling to many new places, and the first thing you do is get the food and meet with a local and see the city through their eyes, through the food, became a very natural way of telling the story of a place. And I think that when I was putting it all together and I knew that I wanted to do a magazine, it was just so natural. I never thought that there was a clear definition between history and food, and there's not between food and travel. I think that they're so connected. It felt very natural to me, and I loved the idea of doing it through one place, because after 200 pages, and I think that Fare is quite a deep dive, you get a real feeling of where you've been, and you leave with something tangible.
And I love when you say that it feels natural, because I have issue two in front of me, which is all about Helsinki. But even though it's only issue two, it does have a feeling of a magazine, you know, that's been around. You know, it feels, you know, very confident. Especially, I've seen the Istanbul one, which is the first, and had the same kind of feeling in a way. Yeah. I want to ask you as well more kind of about the business model. Of course, you said it's natural that you wanted to do a magazine.
Yeah.
What about, you know, the financing? How does it feel like, for example, do you sell more on newsstands, subscriptions?
Yeah.
I'd like to know more about this side as well.
Yeah, I sell actually, I would guess around 50% online, which is really nice. Obviously, when you don't have to have a Stagas. I love working with Stagas and being represented by great stores around Europe and some also in North America and Asia. But obviously you stand to benefit more. You profit a little bit more when there's not a middle party. And so that's good to have that. As a business plan, the way it works is sort of similar to how other magazines, I believe, have started with a magazine and then built from there, built a business around what they provide with the magazine. So I do consultancy work, research work within the industry and within the industry, food and travel. And so I sort of start there and build outwards and get involved in projects that meet in the middle of food and travel. But fare is definitely the starting point. And I knew that I wanted to start with fare and see organically what would work. I was able to finance the magazine through a combination of savings, friends, family, and so on. And then was fortunate enough that through the sales of the magazine and some small ads in the first issue, that was able to pay for the second issue. So the money that was initially invested gets put back into it. It's something I jumped into without knowing much about it. And I actually believe after a long period of time working in theory and in academia where everything is, you sort of study how it works and how it might work. And then what I liked was just jumping into it, knowing nothing, and just stumbling into it and figuring out everything as you're doing it. As my friend Jan says, building a spaceship while you're flying it. And I really liked that analogy, and it's been true, but it's been great at the same time.
Is that what you've done, for example, when you're doing research for the Helsinki issue, just visiting the city as well and kind of see what some interesting stories are out there in a way?
To use an example from Istanbul, when we would walk Liz Seabrook, who shot many of the pieces in issue one, and Liz and I were walking around the city streets, and the cats are everywhere, and you're in a bar and there's a cat like on the ledge, and you go to the bathroom in the bar, there's a cat in the stall somehow, and they're just everywhere. And that feeling is something that I wanted to put into the magazines. That's why they're in issue one. The cats are sort of roaming around as they have their own life. We didn't do a similar thing with issue two because we don't get too gimmicky, but that's something that I want to carry forward, the intangible, the little feelings that resemble the feeling that you would have if you were there. So in a future issue, say there's a sort of air to walking through the city at night, and the buildings, the architecture, maybe what I'll do is try to give you that feeling in a different way. I'm being intentionally vague because I'm thinking of something in regards to issue three, but I've not revealed where issue three is. There's quite a cool thing I felt when I was there traveling through the city streets at night, and things that I noticed and the vibe, and I wanted to really reflect that. So, you know, maybe a piece that will be in that issue will be more reflective of this abstract vibe and something that you wouldn't know just by looking up online. You have to feel it. You have to be there to get it.
You're making me very curious, Ben. But I'll keep it quiet. I'm not going to try again. But let's talk about some stories at fare. You know, there's so many interesting stories. I mean, as you say, it's almost like 200 pages. Yeah. And I love the story of Cosmos Restaurant, which is one of the most traditional in Helsinki, right? Beautiful photography as well.
Thank you. I say thank you. It's Staffan Sundström who took the photos, and also a photographer in the 70s. And I remember seeing the photos from Cosmos in the 70s and being like, wow, it's just so striking and amazing. And I actually ate there the first time with Staffan and another friend, Kenneth, who also wrote a piece for this issue. And it was just, I don't really have, I mean, I wrote words for to describe it, but it's hard to put into words the ambiance of a place that's so old school, and not old school in a way that's gimmicky at all. You don't really see tourists. You see old men in coats and whatever at lunch, and you just think that the place hasn't changed at all in so many years. I think that's one of the things that Helsinki is best for. And one thing that we didn't get it to delve into too much is I loved these. There's little like golden plaques. You see it at a bunch of different old school establishments in the city. There's these golden plaques at a table that says the name of the regulars who used to eat there. And it was their table. And now maybe they were set up in the 80s, you know, put up in the 80s, and they're passed away now. But it's a really cool mix of legacy and food and culture. And that's the thing that struck me most, to be honest, with Helsinki's food culture, was this really well-preserved for lack of a better word, old school places.
Ben, if our international listeners would like to buy a copy, mm-hmm. where should they go?
You can buy a copy of the magazine at fairmag.com, fairmag.com. You can get a subscription, a few copies together, package deal. And one of the great things is that while I'm based up in Glasgow in Scotland, we print in Berlin because of the shipping rates. So it's the same price, same low price for us to ship to London as it is to Sydney, as it is to New York. So it's really, I think that's been one of the greatest things, to be able to get the magazine cheaply to people. It's only £3 to travel anywhere in the world, basically.
And I was going to ask, when is issue 3 coming out? I know issue you can't review the city. But.
Yeah, issue 3 should be out in late May or June. And then hopefully issue 4 before Christmas this year.
That was Ben Mervis, editor-in-chief of Fair, talking to the Stacks, Fernando. And Faye, you're still with us. Let's move on. And this is a magazine that, well, I have to bow to your expertise in the matter, because it's Flaneur magazine, a title, well, it's really interested. It laser focus on just one street, not just one city, a single street in a given city. And your view here needs to be heard, because for the 7th issue, Flaneur is looking at 13 de Mayo, which is a street, of course, in São Paulo, your hometown. What a treat.
I was very excited. I knew Flaneur. I think it's an excellent magazine. And it's funny, Tom, because they look at one street per issue. But, you know, it's such a massive issue. I don't know how many pages. But, you know, as you can see, the magazine is in the big format. There's about 300 or more pages as well. It's all about one city. It's fascinating. But then when issue 7 was about São Paulo, say, we have to get the editors in. And he chose a street again, which is not a very touristic street of São Paulo. I know very well because, you know, I'm a local in a way, but I was, you know, before you've done the interview, I was chatting with him, and I said, why did you choose 13 de Mayo? And he's like, he wanted to escape from the obvious, you know. People were suggesting streets to him that were like, you know, it's been featured already in a lot of guides and everything, but 13 de Mayo is a very interesting choice. It can be a bit rough, that street, actually.
Well, if you look through the magazine, you'll see it's a real mixed bag, and they don't shy away from bringing you some of the colour, I guess, from the street. And it's a street you did know, and is it, you used to head there? Was there a nightclub there, Faye? Maybe it's not there anymore.
There was a nightclub. It's not there anymore. It's called Gloria. And the special thing, because before it was a nightclub, it was a church. So basically, it looks like a church, but then, yeah, you do other things. You don't pray there. Maybe, you know.
That's an interview for another day, perhaps.
Exactly, exactly.
But it is a superb magazine. I had the pleasure of talking to Fabian Saul, who's one of the editors-in-chief, and they kind of live it. They relocate to these cities. They're there for months. It's extraordinary. He told me all about it. Let's hear from Fabian Saul, one of the editors-in-chief of Flaneur.
Our process of going places is quite intuitive, as our name suggests. So we actually start with a lot of walking. We kind of try to face the city without too much pre-knowledge, pre-research. Mm-hmm. So when we came to 13 de Mayo, I think we were quite struck by the fact that we are almost in the center of Sao Paulo, but at the same time, we could feel that there were a lot of qualities of the periphery. And that goes both for the actual urban fabric that surrounded us, as much as for also the narratives that there were surrounding us. So the visible ones, but more importantly, maybe the invisible ones.
Well, yeah, and I guess this speaks a little bit to, I suppose, how you anticipate or would want your readers to read the magazine or to view the magazine, because it's obviously it's a large format, it's hefty, it's a real explosion of colour, of visual styles, it's incredibly rich. Are you already thinking on paper when you're on the ground in your destinations?
The beauty of Flaneur is that I think we, in the beginning, there is not much thinking in paper yet. I mean, we try to meet the artists and writers and people that we collaborate with, the people on the street, without a clear intention. So there can be like a natural development of a relationship that sometimes then ends up being a contribution, but very often these can also end up being protagonists that inform us about the place without maybe becoming a contributor in that sense. In this issue in particular, we feature a lot of protagonists that are like guides for us on the street, that are people that we discover and that kind of lead us to all the hidden layers of the street. So the reader also has the opportunity to meet these characters. And the process of getting this collaboration, which runs for several months on site, into paper is something that comes afterwards. In total, we spent about a year on this issue. So there is pretty much half a year of individual projects on site, contributions being developed, texts being written, photography projects, collaborations between artists. And then there is as much time to piece these fragments together, to give them a framework and also to get them onto paper.
Let me ask you a bit more about that length of time then, Fabian, and this idea of, I guess, kind of putting roots down in a particular place. You spend a lot of time there. I mean, in this instance, I gather on the 13th of May, are you going to be heading back to this very street on that auspicious day? Do you feel like kind of a local in the places that you visit?
Well, that was a big question, actually, of this issue. How much can you, as the outsider, talk about the place? We figured that our position as editors in this is that we are just one voice of many. So what you will find when you go through the pages, there are many voices coming at you, some maybe also contradicting each other. And in between, there is the voice of the outsider, which is us, trying to make sense of it, trying to maybe connect the different stories we hear, we see. So I think in this particular case especially, we also rediscovered our own project as the magazine being more of a platform and us being more of holding the pieces together and also being in the position of just adding our voice rather than overtaking all the other voices.
Now, I've read a couple of reviews of the magazine, Fabian, and I know that I think it was maybe from Stack. They were talking a bit about the experience of reading Flaneur being a little bit like having taken some drinks and kind of not knowing quite where you're going, but being led somewhere and kind of enjoying it, but being a bit nervous. Do you like that idea of the editor as someone to take the reader by the hand and guide them somewhere? Maybe they're not quite sure what they're going to expect.
I really like the idea of what you were just saying, that you as a reader get lost in those pages. I think if we can accomplish that, that's great, because in the end of the day, if we take anyone by the hand, then only to get lost, because that's how you find out about all the things that are not directly visible, all the stories that are not told to you directly. So we are a magazine about one street per issue, which sounds like a certain limitation. But then again, it is a liberation in the sense that we start on one street and we always come back to that street. But in the meantime, we can go anywhere. And I think that goes for the content as well. You end up in places that you would not expect to end up in.
And I guess I don't want to get too sort of meta about this, Fabian, but for you and for Grishina, your co-editor, are you finding that as you continue on this amazing journey with Flaneur, that you're learning things about yourselves, both as editors and I guess also as individuals? Are you on a journey of discovery that mirrors that of the reader?
Yes, for sure. I was saying we are trying to make sense of things, trying to piece the fragments together. If you look at this issue, there is a great variety of pieces. There is someone like André Penteado just taking these incredible pictures of meat, trying to get closer to the meat culture on the street in a very photographic, in a very confrontational way. Then this subject appears between the lines in other essayistic works, in things that we just heard on the street, passing by these barbecue stands, etc. It is a subject that runs through the pages and that in some way we have to piece together, puzzle together. So we are always in a place where we don't have the full authority to speak about the place, but where we're asking questions and where we're just listening in and where we often get confused and lost. But in the end of the day, allowing all these different mythologies to appear, you end up becoming much more involved in the place, actually, than if you would, let's say, just stay on the surface as maybe a tourist guide would do. We also learn a lot along the way because we build relationships with people. And a lot of them make it into that magazine, but a lot of them are also just important for the entire process of this project. And we always try to keep in touch with all the people that we work with as well. So it is a very personal journey.
You probably get frustrated, I suppose, if people ask you about the fact that Flaneur is, I guess, genre-defying or genre-bending in a way, the fact that you take these stories which are, they're kind of about urbanism, they're sort of chronologies, it's literary in character, it's kind of artistic in character as well. Does it matter if people attempt to pigeonhole your magazine? Are you worried that you do or don't have a label that you wear comfortably, or is that not really important?
Well, I mean, I think that's the strength of this magazine, that we are interdisciplinary and we are a collaborative project. So all the kind of crossroads can be explored fully. And I do think that between the lines, there is much more to find out about Trish de Mayo than you would by just staying on the surface. So I see it as a strength because it allows us for also to surprise ourselves. It allows us to be speaking about a place like Trish de Mayo, which we do, but at the same time, you see on the cover of the magazine, you have the name of the street, which is also the date, the 13th of May. So we can open up these kind of doors to like these meta layers very easily because we are not bound to any format. We have the freedom of inventing ourselves in a way. And I think rediscovering our own concept was one of the key things that happened to us as a team with this issue.
Far be it from me to put you on the spot, and I don't know if this is even out there yet, but where might we be headed next? I mean, presumably, is your list of potential destinations, does it grow ever longer with every turn you take?
For sure. I mean, there is no limitations when you do a magazine about one street per issue in that sense. But I can tell you, our next issue is going to be in Taipei. We're heading there in the summer, and we're going to stay there for 3 months and going to work on issue number 8.
Well, listen, Fabian, more power to you. I think it's a wonderful journey, and it's a pleasure to be a part of it each time. And number 7, Sao Paulo, no different. The editor of Flaneur, Fabian Saul, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Let's wrap up by talking about another title. In fact, it's not new to our listeners. We check back in regularly. But again, there's this sense of place communicated in quite extraordinary style. It's Lodestar's anthology, one country per issue. So the scope is a bit wider, the focus broader, but they bring still a great sense of authority, warmth, communicating wonderful stories. They've been in Japan, Canada, here in England, of course. They're across La Manche. France is in focus.
Beautiful, beautiful, actually, issue about France. And again, it's not that she was avoiding clichés, but she told me, you know, when she thought about France, you know, there were so many things to cover. But then it became natural, you know, she went there, you know, her team went there as well. And then they were just kind of finding places, you know, so it was a very kind of organic. For example, she said there was quite a lot of nature there. So it's not all about, you know, the cafes in Paris or something. So she said, in a way, it almost looks like Canada, but it's a part of France that not many people know. But it's a wonderful issue as always. I think you always admires or how beautiful. It's good for a collection, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think all the titles here have that more almost bookish, certainly collectible quality. The title's editor and founder, Faye was mentioning her there, is Liz Schaefer. Let's hear her now. She talked to Fernando before.
This was the first issue that I was just getting these amazing pictures in from these wonderful people that we'd either worked with before or I'd been desperate to work with for a while. And I just kept saying yes to them. And so they started coming in and it was all great. And I felt really confident with who I'd chosen to work with. But the stories were all quite different. I was sort of picturing a France magazine that was going to be Parisian skylines, which are on the cover, so it's okay. Quaint villages, lots of cheese, lots of wine, sort of the France that we imagine. And it ended up being sort of an ode to the wild. And these stories just kept coming in and kept being green and adventurous and sort of harking back to literary giants. And wine and cheese is still there, of course, because it just wouldn't be France otherwise. But it's not the issue I imagined, and I love it all the more for it.
Let's do some preview. What's your schedule for the year? Because, of course, you told me about India, which probably is coming out sometime in late summer.
That is coming out in August, if all things sort of go to plan. So that will be our 10th issue, which will be slightly bigger and a bit of a colourful extravaganza. It's quite interesting, again, speaking of sort of losing control, which seems to be the theme of this chat. Yeah. We're trying something new with India in that we've got a lot of the photos through from our photographers, and they just are next level. And I think with a country like India, it just responds so well to being photographed that we're going to have a very photo-heavy issue, which will be very different for us, so hopefully that works. And then later in the year, right before Christmas, we're going to be re-releasing our very first issue. But it's going to be quite reimagined. We have like a wonderful team now that we didn't have when we started out. It was basically me, my mother, and any friend I could have write for me. So we're going to revisit a lot of those stories that we first did, add to it, look more at England now that we have the ability to look deeper, which will be very exciting.
Yeah, I look forward for the India issue. One question, actually, for all the countries that your magazine covered. I always have had this question for travel magazine editors. What about the weather? You know, how much planning do you say, oh my God, we have to do the France issue, but we have to shoot everything during spring, you know, not winter. How is that? Does it play a big part?
It's strange. Everybody asks me normally how long it takes to make an issue. And the standard answer is, well, it's 5 months between issues. But you do have to start thinking about it about 18 months out in terms of trying to get stories from spring, summer, autumn, winter, having room for things that go wrong. If you need to go revisit a place because the photos were just atrocious because you were met with a hurricane, then you have to do that. But it's also a case of being honest about what travel is. So in the upcoming India issue, we have a story on the Andaman Islands, but the poor photographer was completely wiped out with food poisoning and exhaustion and was there in the middle of a storm. So his photos are of like turbulent waters and dark skies, which isn't the view of paradise that people come to expect. But we love it because it happens. And again, in France, we had a beautiful story up in the mountains about sort of cooking in the wild. And we had to extend that stay by about 4 days because we got some lovely photos in sort of the wild weather, but we really wanted to show people the sunshine, which meant 4 extra days. So flexibility is really, really valuable, but you work with what you get.
Talking about challenges, I mean, I will read out all the countries you've covered: England, Scotland, Australia, Italy, Sweden, Canada, Japan, New Zealand, France. India is coming. What's been the most challenging issue? Because, you know, from the way you've been saying, you know, France was not challenging per se, but it opened a little bit your mind in a way. But which one was the hardest?
Oh, goodness. I think each comes with its own unique set of challenges. Just when you feel like you figured out how to run a business and how to run a magazine, an issue will come and be like, we're going to be this way for you. And you have to problem solve your way through it. So I think it's just being open to what's going to be thrown at you and realize that nothing ever goes swimmingly. There's always going to be a typo or a problem or an issue in everything that you send to print. So it's being open and relaxed around the possibility of an error or the possibility of a challenge.
Lodestar's anthology has been in the newsstand since 2014. Did you see any change from 2014 to 2018 in the world of magazines? Is it being more challenging for you or perhaps a bit easier now that you know the drill a little bit?
The one thing I find most uplifting is when we first came out, the narrative was very much that indie wasn't going to work and, you know, you'd be lucky to get a couple of issues out, be there for a year. What is fascinating is that so many of the magazines that came out around the time of Lodestars are still out. That scene has completely changed in that it's not something you dabble in, it's something that you can try and launch a magazine into and have a chance of succeeding. And that is a completely different narrative to what I faced coming out.
You're very right. I mean, a lot of those magazines, you know, from 4 to 5 years ago, they're still here. Of course, some of them are not, but, you know, in a way that's natural. It's always been like that.
It used to be the majority and now...
Exactly.
And now survival is the story.
But in terms of sales, do you still have quite a lot of subscriptions or is it more newsstands? Is it changing perhaps or is more or less the same model as the beginning?
I think any change that we've had, and it's been nearly 3 years now, nearly 4 years now, God, has been quite gradual, so you don't notice it so much in the day-to-day. I mean, as an independent magazine, subscriptions are a lifesaver. It's sort of, you feel like you know you're creating something for that way, you know that there is a fan base who will be listening and wanting what you're making, which is wonderful, and financially that really helps us as well. But it's so wonderful as well to know that it's being picked up in newsstands or in shops like Foyles and Daunt, because it means that people who didn't know you were there are finding it and responding to it. And that's a wonderful, very self-indulgent feeling, but it's great.
Liz Schaefer, the editor and founder of Lodestar's anthology, their beautiful most recent edition is in France, as we were hearing. Fernando, it's interesting, isn't it? We have obviously been looking at these sort of independent titles that bring each of them, in their own way, a unique focus, but they manage to communicate that sense of place. And I think there's still something undeniable about great print that manages. I mean, we try and do it, of course, at Monocle, to convey that sense of place. Print still does it like no other medium, really.
Well, and beautiful publications in tone, I have to say. Lodestar's issue 9, Flaneur issue 7. So clearly are also business models that are working, you know, and they're already planning next issues. And that's what we like to hear.
Absolutely. More power to them all. I hope you've enjoyed being taken on, I guess, a bit of a global odyssey on the stack. We do our best. Thanks to Fernando, as always, for producing the programme. Thanks to our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have comments or queries, drop me a line or write to Fernando. He's on
fp@monocle.com.
He's very good at doing that. Thank you, Fernando. Do drop him a line, whether it's fan mail about a title you love or something that maybe we might have missed and we should feature on the programme. Do get in touch. Until next time, this is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.